It was the spring of 1999. Myself, along with 200 other fans, many in costumes, started lining up around the building of the Chilliwack Cottonwood 4 Cinemas at 10 p.m. to wait for the midnight premiere showing of what movie? Can you guess? It was Star Wars: The Phantom Menace. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I'm not old enough to have seen the original films when they first came out, but I'm sure that if I was born in the 50s or 60s, I would have been lined up outside the movie theater in the 70s and 80s in order to watch the premiere showings of those films as well. Since the release of the first Star Wars film in 1977, the franchise has grown into much more than just a series of films. Along with Tolkien's Middle-earth, Star Trek, and Marvel, it is one of the largest and most popular story universes in Western culture. Within the Star Wars universe, there are 15 films, about 10 television series, over 500 video games, 381 individual book titles, and 890 different Star Wars Lego sets. This is an astounding amount of merchandise and story content, and it all started from a single script for a very experimental movie released over 45 years ago. How does this work? How can so much variation and diversity be there, yet these hundreds of different books, video games, movies, and Lego sets remain recognizable as part of a single unified story? Stories that fit within the same story universe do so because they share a set of core elements, and these include essential details about the setting, the characters, the plot. In the Star Wars universe, for example, there are details about the political structure of the universe, the evil Galactic Empire, and the heroic Rebel Alliance. These elements would also include details about the mysterious magical energy field called the Force, and those who use this energy, the Jedi and the Sith. There are also core elements about the plot of the story, including the struggle of the underdog forces of the Rebel Alliance against the ruthless and militarily superior Galactic Empire. The unlikely heroes, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Leia, facing off against Darth Vader, and of course, the soap opera-like twist at the end involving unknown parentage. These are all unique identifiers that allow us to recognize that a story is in that particular universe. These core elements also allow for new stories, characters, and plot twists to be told within that larger story universe, as long as the new stories stay true to those core elements. Why am I talking about the Star Wars universe? Because I want to unpack the idea of God as an author or storyteller. More specifically, God as the author. And I want to relate the idea of a fictional story universe like Star Wars to a real story universe that shapes our life and faith in the real world. I believe that understanding God as author can impact our perspective on who or what has authority in our lives, and also shape the way we view our own culture and story and the multitude of other cultures and stories around us that we interact with every day. So let's get started. And what better place to start than? A long time ago, in a galaxy, actually in our own galaxy, a story began to unfold. Actually, the author, God, began telling a story, and in the process of that story being told, our universe began. I'm going to read from Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. God is the author of creation. And we know that because God used his voice to call everything into being. In verse 3, it says, "And God said, let there be light." All throughout the first chapter of Genesis, God is using his voice, his words, to call things into being and to name those newly created things. He started with the setting of the story, the universe itself, the heavens and the earth. He then gave more detail to that setting, by creating the rhythms and patterns of the story, like day and night, the seasons, and the ways of marking time, days, months, years. Then God filled the setting of the story with a tremendous abundance of life, including plants and trees and all the animals. Finally, he created the characters, man and woman, in his own image, but not just to observe or toy with, like in the pagan creation stories. God created them for relationship, for community with each other and with himself, reflecting the community that exists within God himself, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, as Craig preached last week. If he is the author of this story, that means he has ultimate authority in the universe, over everything that happens in the universe. This is the objective truth that the Bible proclaims. There is one story, one author of that story, and the author of any story gets to decide what is defined as good and bad in that story, gets to define who the heroes are, who the villains are, defines what constitutes noble pursuits and goals and what constitutes ignoble pursuits and goals. The author of the story determines the plot, where the story is going, and ultimately how the story is going to conclude. As Christians, we have consciously chosen to live within God's story, which means we submit to God's authority because he is the author. We stand in a long line of people throughout history who've recognized God as creator and author and seek to live in accordance with his story. The Old Testament of the Bible provides the continuation of God's story after the creation account, including the stories and triumphs of many heroes of the faith that chose to honor God and live for him. However, if you read the story of these people in the Bible or just look around at our own culture today, it is instantly clear that not everyone chooses to live in God's story universe. Not everyone recognizes God as the author, and consequently, they don't recognize him as their authority. There are other stories about where our universe comes from and what the purpose of life is. Different stories about how people are meant to live together and the values and goals that we should have. What I want to explore today is how we as Christians, or communities of Christians, the church, interact and think about these other stories. And to break that huge concept down into a more manageable size, I want to just look at our own cultural context here in North America and look at the competing stories that exist here, because that is what is most pertinent to us. In order to do that, we need to take a brief look at where our cultural tradition came from in order to understand it better. We live within the context of Western culture. North American culture is a culture that has shaped my worldview the most, and probably most of the rest of us as well. Obviously, we don't have time to go through the whole history of Western civilization today, but I want to look at that history in the broadest possible terms in order to see where we have come from as this cultural story, and where we are now and where we might be heading. Our story begins with the early church, and the first churches were established in the context of the Roman Empire. Even though Rome was the unchallenged military and political power around the Mediterranean, it was a time of great cultural and religious diversity. You could say that there were many competing religious and philosophical stories. This is a list of the predominant religions, cults, and philosophies of that time and place. But this is definitely not an exhaustive list. Of all of these on the list, the worship of the Roman Pantheon, the official Roman religion, warrants extra mention, because it was the official religion of the Roman Empire. This meant that participation in these religious ceremonies and customs was not simply a spiritual practice, but a political and civic one as well. Within this period, God's story was very much in the minority, as it was just the Jewish communities and the fledgling communities of Christ followers who affirmed Yahweh, God, as creator and sovereign over all. An example of this religious diversity can be seen in the account of the Apostle Paul's encounter at Mars Hill in Athens. This is found in Acts chapter 17. says, while Paul was in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears. We would like to know what they mean." All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Paul then stood in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you." And he went on to tell the story of Jesus. We'll talk more about this encounter Paul had with these Athenians later on, but for now let's just notice the eagerness of these philosophers to hear about new ideas and foreign gods. Also, the variety of religions and philosophies that were represented in just this one place. It was within this cultural and religious context that the gospel, the good news about Jesus, was spreading, and the church grew rapidly as increasing numbers of people became part of God's story. Over the course of about three centuries, this story universe went from being a small minority within the diversity of stories within the Roman Empire to becoming the predominant story and official religion of that same empire. The book of Acts in the New Testament of the Bible contains amazing details about what the beginning of that process looked like. However, in order to catch a glimpse of what the later part of that process was like, I want to tell you about two Roman emperors of that period, Diocletian and Constantine. The Roman Empire, Diocletian, ruled from 284 to 305 AD, during which time the empire was split up into four different regions, each having its own emperor. Diocletian ruled the eastern region that included Palestine and what is now Turkey, which is where all seven of the churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were located, so we know that Christianity had really begun to spread there. The story goes that Diocletian was getting together with Galerius, the emperor of the region just west of his, for a special religious ceremony in order to see the future. Certain animals were sacrificed, and the priests attempted to read the entrails, which is what the ceremony involved. But apparently, the priests were unable to read them this time, and the blame for this was placed on Christians who were part of the imperial household. This led to a relatively mild but systematic regime of persecution of Christians in that part of the empire. 2 years later, however, Diocletian and Galerius again sought divine direction because they couldn't agree whether the hardships they had placed on Christians in their region had been enough to appease their gods or not. This time, they consulted the oracle of Apollo, who would have been a priest that was believed to speak on behalf of Apollo. The response from the oracle was that, quote, "the impious on earth," translation, those who didn't practice the official Roman religion, were preventing the oracle from being able to hear from Apollo. And this kicked off a period of almost 10 years of what will be known as the Great Persecution. Churches were burnt, copies of scriptures were seized and destroyed, Christians were tortured and executed in all the terrible ways you might imagine from a period known as the Great Persecution. Eventually, the laws that led to this treatment of Christians was rescinded, as it was clear that the effort was not successful in bringing Christians back to that traditional Roman religion. Diocletian is the first emperor I want to look at. The second is Constantine. Constantine began his reign as emperor in 306 AD, only a few years after Diocletian, and like Diocletian and Galerius, was an emperor of one of those four regions I showed earlier. Unlike Diocletian, however, by 324, he had risen to become the sole emperor of Rome. This he achieved by successfully carrying out some key economic reforms as well as resolving some internal and external military conflicts. And like all emperors before him, Constantine grew up following the customs of the Roman religion. However, due to the influence of his mother, a Christian convert, he also converted and became the first Christian Roman Empire emperor. Throughout his reign, he enacted new laws that ensured tolerance for Christianity within the empire, and by the end of it, he officially embraced Christianity as the official religion of the Roman Empire. At this point in the history of Western civilization was one of decreasing religious diversity as all the pagan cultures within the influence of the Roman Empire began to convert to Christianity. This process did not lead to a similar decrease in cultural diversity, however, as the work of Jesus through the church is to redeem culture, not to obliterate it. As the church grew and expanded, God's story universe grew and expanded, bringing more and more unique peoples under God's authorship, his authority. And even as the variety of cultures within that overarching story grew, they were connected and united by core story elements, as I referred to when describing the Star Wars universe. But in this real-life story universe, those elements included beliefs and values based on the Bible and the mission of the church, things like God is creator and sovereign over all, Jesus as God's Son, who is Savior and Lord, the Holy Spirit who empowers Christians to carry out his mission in the world. Shared beliefs about the church as the physical presence of Jesus in the world. These core elements united the multitude of unique cultures and ethnicities, so they all saw themselves as part of a single, larger, divine story. After centuries of this alignment between the church and the political and social structure in Western culture, these beliefs became assumed within the geographical region in which this church and state allegiance had influence. In other words, if you were a citizen of a Western region or country, it was assumed you held to Christian beliefs and practice. Looking back over the 1500 plus years of history when this was playing out, we can see some definite positives of this system in terms of the expansion of the gospel message and the widespread worship of God throughout the Western world. However, there were downsides to this marriage of church and state as well. Our goal today is not to weigh the pros and cons of this period of history, but simply to recognize that for many centuries, Christian values and beliefs became intertwined with the political and social values of Western society. And this significantly impacted the way in which Christians thought of themselves within that story universe. Their core spiritual beliefs were aligned with the cultural and political values of their country, which is wonderful. However, because Christianity was the official religion of the state, participation in the church could be motivated just as much by a sense of civic duty as by genuine faith. So to recap, Western culture was like the Star Wars universe. Lots of diversity, but a shared set of core elements that were based on a biblical worldview. This is where we came from culturally. Now, let's take a look at where we are now. I've called this section Welcome Back to the Multiverse. I want to read an excerpt from a book called The Network State. By the late 1800s, Nietzsche wrote that God is dead. What he meant is that a critical mass of the intelligentsia, the elites, didn't believe in God anymore, not in the same way their forefathers did. In the absence of God, a new power rose to preeminence, one that existed before but gained new significance, the state. And so in the 1900s, why didn't you steal? Because even if you didn't believe in God, the state would punish you. The full global displacement of God by the state, something already clearly underway in France since 1789, led to the giant wars of the 20th century, democratic capitalism versus Nazism versus communism. These new faiths replaced G-O-D with G-O-V, faiths which centered the state over God as the most powerful force on earth. There's a lot in this excerpt, and we don't have time to unpack it all. If this topic is interesting to you, I'd recommend reading this book, as I think it does a thorough job of describing our complex cultural moment here in the West. For now, the key thing this excerpt says is that a seismic shift took place at the end of the 19th century. It marked the beginning of the end for this unification of Western culture around a biblical worldview. When we talk about these kinds of big picture societal changes, we have to remember that things move very slowly. Even 100 years after Nietzsche wrote that God is dead, the full impact and implications of the shift that he was observing are still playing out today. When God's story is infused with the very fabric and aspirations of an entire civilization for over 1,000 years, it takes a long time for the patterns and structures of that union to unwind. But that unwinding is what characterizes the trajectory of our culture today. Have you ever had the feeling that things are just getting a little weird in North America and in Western culture in general? Things seem familiar on the surface, but under the surface, there are dramatic shifts taking place. Some ideas or beliefs that used to be almost universally held in our culture are no longer so. Why is that? What's happening under the surface that's causing these shifts? My theory is that things are moving in the reverse of what we observed with the establishment of Western Christianity. I think we're going from Western culture being a single universe to the West and the whole world moving back to more of a multiverse, a collection of distinct universes existing close to each other, but without the common ground of shared beliefs or core story elements. Here are some images that I'd like to try to illustrate that and share what I'm talking about. What makes these images funny is that they're taking elements from different story universes and putting them together. And doing that emphasizes the incompatibility of those stories and elements. And this is what it feels like in our culture for me right now. It's like a growing number of different story universes all mashed up, like the list of competing religions in Rome. Each one has its own set of core elements, and there's limited common ground between them. It's not difficult to see this trajectory, this movement towards a multiverse. The question is, what should our response be to it as Christians and as churches? If only there was some document, some book that gave Christians some insight into how to live in this kind of cultural context. Oh, right, there is. It's called the Bible. The Bible, especially the New Testament, is our handbook for being missional in the multiverse. I remember in my Bible school days when I first realized that the early church described in the Bible and the New Testament was growing and thriving in a very different kind of cultural context that I experienced here in Canada. It was encouraging to know that even if our culture here in the West became less friendly to the gospel or even hostile to it, the Bible can speak to how I should live as a Christian here. This is what I'm hoping to convey in this talk today. Yes, our Western world is changing, and the trajectory is towards less alignment with a biblical worldview. But this is nothing to be fearful about. God is still the author. God is still in control, even when it seems that fewer people around us recognize God's story as the story. The question is, how do we relate with our culture that is increasingly made up of a wide range of competing stories, many of which are at odds with God's story? One of the most helpful and instructive passages for me when thinking about how to relate with others from different stories is one that we've already looked at briefly, Acts 17, and Paul's interaction with the people at the Areopagus in Athens. As I read the passage about Paul at the Areopagus again, I invite you to use your imagination as you listen. Think about your own workplace or school or even your extended family and visualize all the different story universes that you encounter in those contexts. Imagine the people you interact with in those contexts as the people in the story in the Areopagus debating all the new ideas and philosophies that come their way. as you listen to God using Paul to communicate to this group of people, invite God to allow you to show, invite God to show you how to find some common ground or some entry points for a conversation with them. You read, while Paul was in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears. We would like to know what they mean." Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walk around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands, as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man he made all the nations, that they would inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own people have said, we are his offspring." To close, I'll just share some of my takeaways from this passage as far as guidelines for being missional in the multiverse. Firstly, assume nothing. Just because someone lives in the same country or city as you, dresses in the same kinds of clothes, or goes to the same gym, it doesn't mean that they share the same worldview. Don't be surprised when people express very different views than your own, and try not to shut people down or become condescending, but take on a posture of humility. This is a great opportunity to ask questions. Find out what people's convictions are by asking about their values and goals. Secondly, find common ground. Like Paul did in the story, look for shared values, even if they're fundamental, if there are fundamental differences in core beliefs. This can facilitate relationship and open the door to further conversation and influence. We can see this in the fact that Paul sought out Jews and God-fearing Greeks to speak to about Jesus. These would have been people with some shared beliefs about God. Next, Paul looked at elements of the pagan religion that he could use as an inroad, like the idol to the unknown God, and the poetry from one of their own poets. Thirdly, share your convictions with confidence and kindness. Again, we see this in the story of Paul, as he engaged with this group in a clever and respectful way, but without compromising the content and clarity of his message. Paul boldly proclaimed the truth about God in a place that he knew would be skeptical at best and hostile at worst. God, the author, continues to tell his story. Our calling as Christians is to help others find and follow Jesus. In other words, bring into God's story those who are currently outside of it. Through this missional work that Jesus empowers us to do by the Holy Spirit, we can see our friends, neighbors, and city, country, and world come into alignment with that story again, redeeming individuals and entire cultures through Jesus Christ.